mean to three old Negroes? You about to find out tonight on Eight Black Hairs. Welcome, friends and fam, to another episode of Eight Black Hands. Tonight, we got a very special show for you. We are missing some hands, but we have better hands in place because better hands are the ones that arrive and show up. Who do we have tonight? We have Dr. Robert Simmons, who started some violence on Twitter today. And actually, it was yesterday, this week. And it's unforgivable. This brother goes on and he tries to get people to name their top five hip-hop groups of all times, and violence ensued afterwards. Brother Simmons, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good to see y'all as always.
I like Chris, your sign in the back Randy. There.
Was that
quite appropriate for our conversation?
Yeah, you know, it's perfect. You know what? I will say that Wu-Tang on all the lists, Wu-Tang made everybody's list. So you're right there. Oh, they didn't? Really?
Some people didn't have a woo on there. Wait, I wanted to block them on social media for not having the woo. There's a standard.
I didn't see that.
I mean,
I missed that part. Okay.
Yeah, not everybody had the woo. But yeah, but you had the Beastie Boys. So let's start there.
Well, you know, because you really want to get violent. Later, though, you right? really want to get, yeah, you want to get violent right away from the very beginning. Damn. Well, let's start with why y'all wanted to give our brother Sharif such a hard time. I just want to start with that. He's not here to defend himself. And I want to know, why would you give the brother who grew up in Iran a hard time by missing a few acts here and there?
A few?
I mean, he had most of them. No, as a matter of fact.
Wait. That's like being from Detroit and somebody asks you what is good music and you don't mention any Motown artists, regardless of generation. Regardless, you can't be from Philly, rep Philly, always up in my Twitter feed when the Eagles was running to the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden you forget to name the Roots?
Yeah.
Cut it out.
Yeah. As much as he out here talking about, oh, Black Thought is in my, the Black Thought ain't in your top five, such. You don't know.
I do want to say this. I do want to say this about the Roots.
Yeah.
Not everybody considers them a rap troupe. That's a band.
Okay. Fair enough. But
I wouldn't have put them on a list of top hip hop groups. They're a band. That's a band. Yeah. They play whole ass instruments.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean. But like, that's like saying
Name another hip hop group that plays their own instruments.
Run DMC played with a band a couple times. It was
played
still
with a band. Played with a band called Aerosmith.
Fair enough.
I mean that would be kind of like calling Goody Mob a rap troupe. You know. You don't think so?
I feel like Goody Mob is a group.
You think they're a hip hop group?
Yes.
Or a band.
Oh, a group.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let y'all live on that one a little bit.
Your assessment of the Beastie Boys as being in the top five, sir.
Bruh, yeah. you from Detroit. You got Eminem as your top seller.
No.
And what's his name? MK, what's his name? What's the other dude's name?
Machine Gun Kelly.
The one that dresses like Cher now.
Machine
Gun Kelly, yeah, here you go.
He's from Cleveland, sir. He's not from Detroit.
Oh, he's not.
Machine Gun Kelly is not from Detroit.
Are y'all just not claiming him now, or what?
No, he's not.
don't distract.
You know what? The Beast. You know who is? What's his name? Who grew up with the $5 million house and then all of a sudden wanted to go hip hop? Kid Rock.
Kid Rock is not from Michigan.
He's from Michigan. He's not from the city.
Well, bro, okay.
So now he's speaking from Detroit.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You got to be from the city.
You see how that moved? You see how that line moved?
we got a standard here. Sometimes the line moves for the standard. So it's a bit subjective at times.
I will say this much. When I was doing some research for this show, I was trying to look up stats, and it's very hard to get accurate hip-hop stats because there are so many different sources that have different criteria and different ratings for what
when you say you know, stats. What do you mean, like album sales?
Yeah, it was like trying to figure out like the top of all time, the sales, and you know, was there was a difference between the top albums and the top acts, right?
Fair enough.
Like there'd be people that had one album that was like the top album. Eminem showed up on the list like with 3-4 of his albums at the top of a lot of lists by himself.
Okay, so but here, let's make a clear distinction here, right? We're talking about
make a groups. Distinction.
We're talking about groups right now. We're not talking about
this is individual. Group. He was part of a group.
That D12 bullshit.
D12.
No. See, he did this on social media to me when he brought Eminem to the conversation, but I offered a little bit of constructive feedback of his selection of the Beastie Boys. It's a distraction.
What did you say about the Beastie Boys? First of all, okay, let's go there because y'all keep hitting me up on this Beastie Boys. I just want to address y'all racism real quick. So, so what's wrong with the Beastie Boys? Why y'all hate the whites in hip hop?
So it's no hatred of the whites.
It is.
Let's start there first, right?
Because it is.
Cancel culture is real.
Yes,
but there's so many more talented black rap groups that I was watching Melly Mel. Melly Mel had did a segment or whatever, right? And he was talking about just like being black and being in hip hop. And he was talking about Eminem being in people's top five. Mm-hmm. And he made the reference of there are people that are lyrically just as nice as Eminem that are not in everybody's top five. And Eminem is only in the top five because he's white.
That's bullshit. Y'all know that's bullshit.
That's true.
There ain't nobody in hip hop that want to like have beef with Eminem.
Nope.
I've heard multiple rappers actually just admit it straight up, just like straight from the jump. Just be like, yeah, you can say all that all you want. Like when Budden and others were trying to say that, like you a visitor, you a tourist and all that, whatever they were trying to say about him. There's a gang of hip hoppers who were like, you out your damn mind with your one hip
black hip hop cast.
You know,
the Game said that specifically. Yeah.
The Game said it. Lots of folks, you know, Snoop said it. Like, lots of folks said, you know, you can say what you want about him, but you won't be on the wrong side of that.
And Eminem put his boys on, and he created D12 to support his homies. Like, he put them on. Like, he didn't walk away from them and just be like, all right, I made it. So that's the other part for me. And he made it through the hip-hop shop, which is like, hardcore hip hop in Detroit. So he didn't come through like Vanilla Ice.
Break that down, right? What is this hip hop shop that out of Detroit? Like
in the day, the hip hop shop was actually a store, but it became like a place where people would perform. And it was where all of the hip hop artists kind of underground would go. There was there every now and then you have St. Andrews Hall, which is downtown, hip hop shops on the east side. And they would go there and battle. And Eminem did his thing and then battles. And like cats who understand the culture of hip hop in Detroit, people dogged him because he was this white boy trying to get into the hip hop game. And that was,
I've seen like video footage of that. That was a real shop. That was a real shop. Like you were courageous just to step up.
Correct. That's right. And that's
it was no joke in there.
Yeah, he wasn't like Vanilla Ice.
Mm-mm.
Just Mm-mm. showed up, you know. And that's the part for me where I'm always like, And there was a list I saw on maybe it was The Source today because I was doing some reading. I was intrigued by the Beastie Boys, and I was wondering what people actually said historically about the Beastie Boys. And the Beastie Boys actually were culture bearers in hip hop at that time because I think they were the first group of white boys to actually get into hip hop. So I reframed my thought process and was like, okay. Maybe
I'm gonna make your head spin when you get done with this comment. Go ahead, keep going. I'm about maybe, to make your head spin.
And I think for Ray's point about how do we think about hip hop artists and groups? Is it record sales? Is it what their peers say? Is it their impact on the culture? Mm-hmm. Like there are these because to me, when I think of impact on the culture, that can be a different thing than artist sales. Or if I think about their impact on me personally. Growing up, because there are cats that were personally impactful that were like that I found like the Cheddar Boys in DC was my jam. I mean, Detroit was my jam. It was a local group. They was just like real hood. But the East Side Cheddar Boys, that was my joint. Right? But they aren't in the top 25, 50 nationally. But culturally.
Neither is Slum Village. But you keep saying that shit.
you did live on Slum Village a little too much.
Yo,
I don't know what your affiliation was.
Why? Yo, bro, so but here's the thing, though, right?
Yeah.
Are we making these arguments based off of regional status, based off of how we grew up, or are we making like a national impact status in terms of like how we rating these groups, right? Because if we're thinking about it from a regional standpoint, then shit, I'm gonna go Cash Money and No Limit. Right.
Okay. It's not regional though. We are like you had the right thing with the top five of all time.
Yeah.
And an impact on the culture. So this is what I say about the Beastie Boys, because I got hell from all y'all racists about the Beastie Boys.
Oh, right. God.
Like just like it's just like all kinds of reverse racism happening. When I brought it to like I never thought anything would be so polarizing. I was like, well, damn, wait a second. Listen, here's the thing about the Beastie Boys. A lot of other people that I had on my list don't have very big discographies. Yeah. For instance, like I had NWA on my list. Somebody pointed that out. They got like really two albums, right? They probably got, you know, they got a whole bunch of other kind of special edition type albums. No, NWA's got like two studio albums. NWA
has a body of work, bro. Because
studio albums under their name. One is trash and the other one is classic. And the rest of them are like offshoots. They're like priority.
Man, I'm no longer listening to you.
Bro, listen, 100 Miles and Running is some afterthought. They needed more Ice Cube and you know.
Oh, Straight Outta Compton.
It was time. Straight Outta Compton was a great. That was a classic. That was classic. Niggas that's what they live on.
Niggas for life.
I mean.
You mean what? Are you mad? What?
Yeah. Anyways, this is what I will say though. Let me get to because I removed them from my list because somebody. You know, pointed out to me, well, you have NWA there, but well, you know, and they don't have as many albums as everybody else that I had on my list.
Right, their impact on the culture.
Impact on the culture. Let's talk about this for 1 second. This is the part that's gonna make your head spin from me, right? Okay, about the Beastie Boys, right? So, Eazy-E himself and Priority Records, when they were looking into NWA's sales, figured out that 80% of their record sales, of all that straight out of the hood shit, 80% was to suburban white kids. And that was one of the first times that they had even done that data, that they had ever seen that. And that's when the world was starting to take notice of hip hop. It didn't matter until the whites got the hip hop, right? But what actually had greased those skids was the Beastie Boys. When Madonna took the Beastie Boys on tour as her opening act, that was widely seen as like this crazy, stupid, silly, why would you do that type of thing? Like she should have taken somebody else that was more in, you know, MTV ready, somebody, you know, like another pop type person or whatnot. And her being Madonna, she always did this. She always tried to introduce underculture things. Like, you know, the gay underculture, the club
doing
scene,
that now.
Because, you know, whatever. She's been doing that for years, but her taking the Beastie Boys was exactly that. And her taking white rappers who had never been seen before, that whole thing had never been seen before, unleashed on the world something they had never seen before. It was all through Madonna, right? So she takes these three white boys around the globe and around the world, and suddenly white people start paying attention in ways. I don't know if y'all remember that. People were talking about hip hop as if it was going to be a passing black fad. No, they did. They absolutely did for years.
Including
radio R&B stations said that.
Oh,
right.
I agree. Like,
yeah, this is just talking over records. It's just talking on music, yeah. You know. It's just talking. They said that all the way up until the dollars started coming in from white audiences.
I agree with that. I don't agree with your assessment of the Beastie Boys, but I agree with that.
Well, listen, who greased the skids for white people to start really loving hip hop, right? To the point where they started outbuying us. They started buying out the culture, right?
It was Beastie Boys. Well, you just said that 80% of NWA's album sales was suburban white people. So they
80% was suburban. Yeah, that came after though.
But they've always bought hip hop music.
No, they haven't.
Bro, white people have always bought hip hop music, man.
Bro, there was a time where there was no category in the Grammys. There was a time where black hip hop artists had to boycott the music shows because their genre wasn't even being listed, bro. There was radio stations that wouldn't even touch a hip hop act. What are you talking about? It took a long time for I'm older than you, maybe, but it took a long time for the legitimate mainstream culture to accept hip hop as pop music.
Who went to see mainstream Crush Groove?
Music.
Who went to see Crush Groove? You telling me white people didn't go see Crush Groove?
I saw Crush Groove. I saw it at the Dollar Movie Theater too.
You think white people went to see Crush Groove?
Bro, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, bro? What's wrong with you? Those movies. We made those movies actually make their budget. We made those movies make their budget.
How long has Rick Rubin been involved with Def Jam?
I mean, he was there from the very, very beginning. Yeah. He was like some of the earliest acts.
You always had a white component to hip hop.
Yeah, but it was black audiences and white audiences. Right. White corporate America wouldn't touch it. White, you know, it took a long time to get hip hop.
And there were black people who wouldn't touch it. Like C. Dolores Tucker was like just bashing N.W.A.
This is right.
And hip hop in general.
Yeah, this is right. And you know, like, I mean, little as it's told. And this is how ironic music can be. And I'm a music nerd, bro. Like, this is how ironic as it's told, how jacked up things can be. The R&B community hated hip hop. And R&B groups was trying to stop sharing the airspace with hip hop. And hip hop overtook R&B at some point and killed it.
Oh, yeah.
R&B at some point was, R&B was kids music. Hip hop was kids music. R&B was grown folk music. And at some point, hip hop took over everything. The radio, the whole set. I don't know if you remember this. You were going to some record stores and they just had a section called Black. Do you remember this? Sam Goody, Musicland. They used to have a section. Yeah. They used to have a section just called Black.
Yep.
Where all the black shit would be, whether it was like West Montgomery or whether it was hip hop.
It would be tied down to the brackets too.
This is true. He just said there's some people who wouldn't know what a record store was.
Don't even know what a record store is. They like a record store. What's that?
If you listen to this and you don't remember Sam Goody, Musicland, Tower Records, any of that type of stuff, you used to have to go and Peaches in New Orleans. You had to go and buy your albums.
That's right.
And bring them home. And sometimes you would make a good choice and sometimes you would make a bad choice.
What was your first hip hop album you bought?
Rapper's Delight.
First hip hop album I bought was NWA. That shit, and that straight out of Compton. And I must have played Fuck the Police. Like,
I remember when I first heard that Straight Outta Compton album.
Yeah.
It can't be understated now because we live in a culture of everything is nasty and hardcore, but it can't be overstated how much of a piercing that was. It just pierced through everything. It was like, damn, who gave them a record contract? God damn, what is wrong with these fools? Yeah. They stealing people's pockets on the record.
I got one for you, Chris, about, you were talking about a group.
Who was your first album? Who was the first album you bought?
Four Righteous Teachers and Kid & Play.
Oh, damn.
I bought that Kid & Play album. That shit was trash.
I mean, I thought it was dope. Because at the time, NWA? Yeah, I mean, I'm going to ignore that.
I mean, what's wrong with you?
Kid & Play was a genre of hip hop that was important. It's like no to the early years of a party hip hop.
Kwame, this is the thing for people listening. Let this be educational for y'all listening, because some of y'all too young to remember when black people had sense. Before gangster rap, which NWA is largely attributed to them, hip hop was about good times,
correct,
and happiness and parties and party. That's all it was.
There was some, bro, listen,
UTFO and Roxanne having a little battle. Having a little fake battle on the thing.
Paris won.
Yes,
Marley Marl, but they should talk about the struggle, man. I don't know if you listen to
No. You're right. There was conscious hip hop.
That's right.
I'm trying to make the transition from there was party and consciousness. Like we were still all together, and eventually beef hip hop came in when corporate America discovered beef hip hop was the way to go. So when we corporatized hip hop, then we lost our conscious and our parties. And we started having fights, and all of our women became hoes, and all of our brothers became niggas, right? So that's the corporate influence. name a nigga on hip hop in my earliest generation of hip hop. Find a nigga or a hoe on my early. Right. Now there was a skeezer. Every now and then there was a skeezer on record, right? But it wasn't division. I hate you. I hate my brother. I hate my sister type of nonsense that you see now.
That's true.
I bet you if you were to line up all the albums of hip hop, you would notice a transition over time. The first one that everybody knew was Rapper's Delight. That honestly was the poppest, the first pop hit of hip hop when people were still saying it wasn't going to last. And that, listen to what's on that record. I mean, think about the lyrics of hip hop, hip hop, you don't stop, rock it up. Yeah, I mean, there's no niggas and hoes in that, right? So I want to know which one of y'all is responsible for the niggas and the hoes.
That's New Orleans. They brought that into the...
No, no, bruh. Stop it. New Orleans didn't even have hip-hop when that got introduced. That was California. I don't even think New York had that. Yeah, I don't even think New York had that going on. That feels West Coast.
What, the bees in the Asians?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You think so?
Yes.
I think so. I'm trying to think of New York hip hop that had it.
From 87 to that first NWA album, which was, I think, 1990, 89, 90, right? Eazy-E had dropped two albums that Ice Cube wrote. And it was a lot of B's and H's in those albums.
Yeah.
So like, that was a prelude. So folks say they give Eazy-E credit as being the grandfather of gangsta rap.
Easy, yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Drug dealer, straight up. And he rapped about drug life. It was like Iceberg Slim got a microphone, right? And couldn't rap, you know.
Well, no, I mean, because when you look at Easy when he didn't have Cube, right? Mm-hmm. It's a total difference from when he did have him.
Yeah.
Right? You can see the impact of what Cube was with his pen. You can see Cube's impact with his pen. And so that's what makes me think, like, when you think about a top five or you think about a top 10,
yeah,
bro, Cube has to be somewhere in terms of okay, all right, let's get to it though.
All right, so let's look here. This is the violence that was started. So the first one that started with the first list had EPMD, De La Soul, Run DMC, Wu-Tang, and Helter Skelter. There's three on here. I don't think that should be on this.
Came from.
There's three that I don't think should be here. I loved me some EPMD, but they were sleepy and high on cough syrup the whole time.
Cut it out.
You got to chill. You got to chill. You got to chill. They sound like they ran up 80 floors of stairs. You know, you got to chill. You guys, come on now. So anyways,
absolutely not.
De La is good on here, but they're hippies.
I wasn't really into De La like that.
I loved De La. They were part of the like the Jungle Brothers and De La and Tribe.
I feel like I would put Tribe before I would put De La.
Tribe was on my list.
Fair enough.
Out of that Tribe umbrella, you got LOR, Leaders of the New School.
Yeah.
Busta and them that came out of that umbrella. So De La look at different.
I liked, so, you know, there were different types of brothers. You know, there were brothers with the little peace symbol and, you know, the little medallion and all that type of stuff. So the Jungle Brothers, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, the whole kind of crew from that side of things were the more crunchy black folks. And that was me. I actually never liked the hatred in the other music. I felt like, what are you niggas so afraid of? Like, what's wrong with y'all? Like, why y'all always, goddamn, calm down. Yeah, I got my AK. Who needs an AK? Damn, you just going to the store. What is wrong with you? Sit down. You got a gang of weed and you got a little money in your pocket. What you need an AK for? Like I said, you ain't guarding the door. What you need a gun for? Anyways, so EPMD. So what do y'all think of this list right here? I'm taking three people right off of it. Helter Skelter. Run DMC shouldn't be on there either. And,
Run DMC is the mecca, bro. That's the mecca. That's the archetype of a rap group.
They're dope, but should they kick off other people on other people's lists? Let's go to RDJ. Let's see what he's got here. The Roots, which is a band.
His list is solid.
The Roots is a band. That's not a group.
That's a solid list.
That's how
big is the Lox's discography?
The Lox is cold.
Yo, the Lox has
how big is it?
They have four studio albums, and then each individual one has like at least three projects.
The Fugees ain't good.
Whoa, you wildin'.
That's not a hip hop group. That's a band. That's another band. No. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
So Castillo should
Proz by himself. By himself. Wait a second.
The Fugees, not a hip hop band?
I'd take that back.
A hip hop group?
I take that back, but it was a little sing songy. But I take that back. I do see them more as not like a I get Wu-Tang, because that's a collective of rappers. That's not singing, that's not dancing, that's not, you know, poppy shit. That's each one of them by themselves was dope. And when you put them together, it was like unbeatable, right?
So, let me ask you this though, right? So when you look at the Wu, right, and you look at what they were able to do individually as well, right? And then some of them branched off. You would have like a Ray and Ghost, you have, you know, different variations, different combinations of them as the Wu. Do you now take a State Property with Beanie and Freeway and State and all those guys in Philly? Are they now considered a group, or are they still like individual acts because they all were able to branch off as well? So how does that work?
When they come together
as
a unit, are they better than the sum of their parts? So there's no doubt that like Wu-Tang was full of like A students. Like name the one that you think is the least good in Wu.
I always thought Oh Dirty was the least talented.
Really? And see, there'll be people that'll fight you on that. They all so good that even the least good one has their people.
I couldn't choose one. Because I thought they all had their unique. I had my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite?
My
favorite was Method Man.
Ooh. Memphis, yeah, I can see that.
My favorite was Ghost. He's always my favorite. Was
either Ghost or Ray.
He seemed like the one that was least likely to rob you.
Meth?
He did. Yeah, he did. You know, he seemed like the least like. The rest of them seemed like they would take your Lexus. So here's my list right here. I got the Wu for one.
Yeah.
NWA, but I had to remove them and replace them.
You didn't have to do that. You did that because, you know, somebody put the pressure on you.
Yeah, she had good pressure though. Tribe, Tribe, of course, and De La, because that was my tribe. I was down for the organic brothers.
Yeah,
the brothers that like vegan food and shit, and the Beastie Boys, right? Like one of the most iconic.
I don't like your 4 and 5.
You don't like De La and Beastie Boys. That's because you're violent, though. That's because you got that East Coast violence in you.
Not in being in a top five.
You need to calm down. See, that's the whole thing. Before hip hop, I had Al Green. That's, you know, I don't. So, anyways, Ashford Hughes, Beastie Boys, not in the top 20, let alone top 5.
Bro, y'all, people gave you that work.
See what I'm saying? And then Robert laughs about it. Look at that. Ha ha ha. They were entertaining. See, at least he admit they were entertaining.
They were entertaining.
Let's see what Heather got here for us. We all think of this list.
What's ATCQ?
A Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, okay.
That's a good one. Hey, the Mighty Cast. Listen, let me tell you something.
Outcast
we're talking about straight up groups.
Yep,
we're talking about bodies of work from Southern Playlist to Cadillac Funky Music all the way to Aquemini.
Yeah.
Outkast's body of work is amazing. I would agree with that.
That's true. I would agree. It's like, I remember this. I remember thinking to myself there needed to be something to emerge out of the South before Southern hip hop like actually took off, when it was still East West. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember thinking when the South pops off, I was thinking it was going to be New Orleans first, of course. I thought that was going to be the first cut. And, you know, there was the Ghetto Boys. So there was kind of a Southern thing.
Okay.
There was kind of a Southern thing, right?
If somebody said either UGK, argument for UGK, or if you said the Ghetto Boys, I would hear that. I would entertain that argument of being in somebody's top five, depending on where you're from.
I would swap the Ghetto Boys out for EPMD, who I loved, but they were sleepy as hell. Come on, the Ghetto Boys were entertaining. I would swap out EPMD for Ghetto Boys.
So yeah. when you think about the Ghetto Boys, and Willie D is going to be mad as hell for me saying that. Willie D was trash, bro. And I felt like Willie D was trash. I felt like Scarface carried the group.
And I don't think like none of them was trash. And if you listen and you ever see me, I never thought you was trash.
Yeah,
you was trash.
Raymond Ankrum said that.
Raymond Ankrum said that.
Quick.
Yeah, but and you find him. You know, we like having Scarface this long too. Conversation. Scarface was
yeah. Scarface is underrated.
Yes, yeah. Very much.
He actually talked about something in his music.
Yes, and
yeah,
yeah.
You know who else is underrated? This is going to be polarizing too. I'll see where y'all fall on this. Some of the most fun hip hop I ever heard was Too Short.
Oh, right?
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
What?
It wasn't like rappy rap. You know what I mean?
It was trash rap.
Yes.
Yeah, it was trash rap. I agree with you on that.
It was where he was from.
Yes, and
it was
that's
him
right.
repping the culture. That's right. It's kind of like you can't. So that's right. Just like how you cape for whoever comes out of the D. You can't be from Oakland. Besides Jim, okay, you can't be from Oakland and not mm-hmm. rep for Too Short,
or E40,
or Master P. Little be told, I mean, Master P did work in Richmond.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he was in Richmond.
Was it?
And when I left California, Richmond was no joke. I remember when late '80s when Richmond, they were bound to have somebody like him pop off.
Yeah, is Richmond on I-10? Can you get to Richmond from I-10?
I don't know about that. There was when I was in Richmond, there was one road in and one road out. That meant you could kill somebody and it'd take a long time for anybody to come and help you. So
I wonder if that road is I-10.
So anyways, we have this long conversation and we have all these frames of reference and these people that we know. And there's a certain age group where we would have some that overlap with each other. And then there's going to be an age group where they don't. But why is this so important? Is there someone somewhere in Kentucky talking about all the country musicians that shaped their lives? Like, you know, like that Travis Tritt. Oh, that Travis Tritt, boy, he played mean guitar. You know, that Garth Brooks, boy, whoo, damn. You know? What is it about us that makes this a part of more than music, but a part of our life? And is that still true for our young people?
It's definitely true for the youngsters. They live this. This is their life because it's like a lot of them. Let me take that back. Not a lot of them. Some of them, their voices are captured in the stories that are told by these hip hop artists because they live the same or similar trajectories in life as these hip hop artists. It's not everybody. You got some people that are from the damn suburbs that don't live a day or a minute of what these rappers are talking about, but yet they try to go out and they try to imitate what they're hearing in these raps. That's what I want to talk about. Because if you ain't from the hood, you shouldn't be acting like you from the hood.
I mean, isn't it true? Mm. Well, first of all, 50% of black children are no longer in urban centers. They're in the suburbs.
Say it.
So there's a book by, and I mentioned this on the show a lot because I feel like it's a forgotten statistic. There's a book by McCoy LaRue, I think is his name, or Leroy McHugh. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all know this book. It's called The Promised Land. Mm-hmm. And his research is on that 50% of the black kids that now live in the so-called Promised Land, which is, you know, the suburbs. And they're out there trying to find themselves and their identity in places where the music is what's keeping that identity alive with them, which means a lot of them are actually what would have been called years ago faking the funk. I don't know what the newer version of that particular thing is, but fronting, you guys be called fronting, capping, yeah. You know, and they got their 8 white friends thinking that, you know, they got a cousin Pookie somewhere that taught them the hood stuff or whatever. I don't know, you know, but the music is what's keeping that alive for them. And I wonder if that's a good thing. Is it a good thing that we got
really quick?
Yeah, before we transition. Go ahead, Pop Dog.
I got a rep for the South. Right, so we got School Ed with Demetria Giles. She said, did y'all mention the Hot Boys? And so I think it's very interesting that she says something about the Hot Boys because you got the Hot Boys, which was a Southern supergroup, right? So you got the Hot Boys that consists of BG, Juvenile, Lil Wayne, and Turk, right? And so these four brothers made up the Hot Boys, and each individual artist also had platinum albums. And this was unheard of coming from the South. Especially coming out of New Orleans, because you know you had Juvenile, who prior to like switching his style, becoming a mainstream hip hop artist, was a bounce artist, right? And a lot of those artists from New Orleans prior to you know switching their styles and whatnot, they were on like a bounce cadence with that DJ Jimmy beat. You know what I'm talking about, Chris? DJ, the J, the I, M, the I. It's
all right, you're about to do it. Okay, go ahead.
This one, you know, building off that success from Master P, and then Matt Cash Money had a run, bro, from 99 to about 2007. Cash Money had a run, man. $100 million.
This is what's
run.
Interesting, though, to the point, though. Like, you talk about Master P. We just talked about how the South wasn't part of the game for a while. So it was all New York for a period of time. New York and Philly and the East Coast. And then the West Coast actually perfected hip-hop because y'all couldn't do it. And then there was this East-West thing, and they started killing each other. And the folks down South was just like, well, we just high. We just want, like, what's wrong with y'all? So they started doing their own music. But up until that time, you could be Black in any state, and that was being exported to you. Right, you was up in your mall in like some state somewhere. You had nothing to do with either Compton or New York.
Yeah,
but it was being exported to you, and you were seeing yourself in it, and it was developing a culture. But then these other places started saying, "Well, I want to say in this too." You know, New Orleans is a good example. Baton Rouge, like who would ever thought something would come out of Baton Rouge, right?
That's true.
Louisiana, right? Like of all places,
Boosie was.
Uncle Luke in Florida, right? Like, you know, who
the Two Live Crew.
We had Isham in Detroit.
What was that? They Shaggy Booty?
Who was that?
Isham. It's like underground hip hop in Detroit.
Oh, I might have to look this up. Yeah. I thought Detroit was about the house music or something else. Like an industrial house or something like that. It just sounded like depression and layoffs. So anyways, like, you know,
I won't even respond to such that's just violent.
It's just violent. It just sounds like white flight. like the aftermath. So anyways, we were talking about this, like, I have been dismissive on this show before about the power of hip hop and its educational value, possibly because I actually can't listen to it anymore like I used to listen to it anymore. I can't listen to my people talk about my people the way that my people talk about my people on hip-hop, in hip-hop. I can't do it for extended amounts of time. I like to love people. I like to love myself and love my people around me. I don't think of my women the way that hip-hop thinks about our women. I don't think about my friends the way that hip-hop thinks about their friends. I don't feel like you need to, you know, get rich or die trying, and you got to get yours, I got to get mine, and you know, you're in my way, so I'll take you out. You know, all of that is toxic corporate nonsense that's being fed to us, force fed to us. But people will argue with me, and what I'm saying right now sounds violent to some people because they're like, no, hip hop's a tool. For this show, I went into Google Scholar to see if I could find some like scholarly, like what people are saying about it or whatnot. Of course, there's lots of people who like are doing their dissertations and stuff on this type of thing because they think they have to get their dissertation because they're Black, right? Like, right. Am I wrong? Just like y'all as educated Black folks, am I wrong about my assessment about the educational value?
No, I feel like there is some educational value, but then you see the folks from like the hip hop head movement, like you'll see that hashtag going around a lot. And I feel like, you know, there's some value in terms of like how you use it, but you know, I see your point, Chris. I feel like there's a lot of damage that's being done by hip hop, and I feel like when we call it out or when we have conversations like this to kind of critique the music, then we're looked at, you know, like people look give us the side eye in terms of like, well, who are you to
you're corny
on the culture, or who are you to no, but like, listen, if we can't have conversations about critiquing something that impacts us. And like, what the hell is the sense?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nuance to it all, right? You know, I couldn't let the show go.
Here we go, nuance. Here comes the nuance.
And I think for me, hip hop is like my love of sneakers, where I feel like there's something about sneakers that I shouldn't like. The fact that they're probably somewhere along the way made in a sweatshop somewhere.
By a 10-year-old.
Right. So I that's my hypocrisy. Right. They are overpriced.
Mm.
Kids in many communities get robbed for them and killed. I had sneakers jacked when I was 14 years old. I had some top 10s and a gun shoved in my face in Detroit. But I love sneakers. Love them. Like, and I can't figure out like how to kick my addiction.
Go broke.
And it's the same.
Shit, that'll kick your addiction real quick.
Fair enough. But it's the same way I think about my love of hip hop. It's like, should I nod my head when I hear 50 Cent? Nope. But I do. Should I love the way that when Drake comes on and he has some songs, I'm like, oh, that's nice. Probably not, but I do. And I think for me, we all live with a level of hypocrisy that we have to reconcile, whether it's sneakers, whether it's Apple Watches. Like I had somebody tell me the other day, oh, well, I hate technology is the devil. And they sitting there with an Apple Watch on. And I'm like, yeah, but you got an Apple Watch on. Like, how come you just can't go get a $12 Timex that just tick, 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 tick? Because for some reason, you wanted that Apple Watch. And I don't knock it. And so I think there it is, right? Blow the whistle.
Woo, woo. It is. Blow the whistle.
I just think that there's a level of hypocrisy that we all live with who are both sneakerheads and hip hop heads. Where like we literally, I'll literally get on a plane, put on Jay-Z, and I can rock out and I'm good. But if I'm listening to Jay-Z and what he's saying,
yeah,
facts. That's also the stuff where I'm just like, damn, I don't want my 12-year-old listening to that.
Hey, right.
So I'm sitting there like, yo, y'all gotta go listen to such and such and such and such. But I also think that hip hop is a great bridge for me to have conversations with my son about history, about what's happened in the world, about how Black folks have told stories in different genres of music. And hip hop is just another way in which we tell stories. But it also gets corporatized and embraced in a way that diminishes its cultural value to some people, right? But I also know that I can't tell my 12-year-old don't listen to hip hop because his friends listen to hip hop.
So, you know, I saw an interview with Lil Wayne where he was like, they were asking him about Black Lives Matter. And he said, what's that got to do with me? He's like, I don't see no racism. And then he said a couple of things that I thought were very important. The first thing he said was, you know, listen, when I was 13 years old, I shot myself and it was a white police officer that came and got me and put me in while everybody else was leaving me out here by myself or whatnot. It was a white man who did that. And when I look out in the crowd, all I see is white faces. So what I need Black Lives Matter for? Why are you asking me about that? What's that got to do with me? And I thought, see, this is what's interesting. Is it's performative blackness. We're not the audience. We're not the target. We're the subject matter. We are the subject, but we are not the audience.
Yep.
So, and we're not the seller. We're not the supplier. We're just the minstrels.
A lot of times we're the buyers.
We're not even the majority buyers anymore right now. Right. So what we embrace deeply, it's us and it's ours or whatnot, is very much like a lot of other things that are being sold to us by the matrix and the machine. And I just don't think we do a very good job, if nothing else, to say to our kids. Now, I know you're gonna listen to this no matter whether I want you to or not, right? But at least let me just tell you a little bit about the business behind it. A little bit of what I just said. You are the object. You are not the seller and you are not the buyer. There's two people on both sides of you, bookending you. And you are in the middle between the two of them. You're a product.
Yeah.
You're not the only one. We're a product a lot of ways. In the United States, I've said it a lot. Black children are the most studied and the least taught, right? Like we have a whole black child industry. Like black children are an industry. They're like, you know, $1 million industry. When I say that black kids are the new cotton, shit, you harvesting them all kinds of ways. Hip hop's one of those ways. Teaching is another one of those ways.
Interesting.
Schools are another one of those ways. Black children are a commodity to the school system. You can process them. You get their per pupil income and you don't have to teach them. Like they're the best commodity. You raise money on their bodies and you don't have to improve their minds.
This is dangerous right now.
Right?
You're moving into dangerous territory because you're telling the truth and then you're talking some real shit. And people don't be liking to hear this, but it's real.
So listen to what I just said now and translate that, because y'all gonna have to help me understand this story that I don't understand. We are a commodity. Hip hop is a commodification of Black culture, and we are not the stakeholders or the shareholders. The school system is another way to process us for our revenue, and we don't get the full value for our revenue that is raised on our bodies and not our mind. And sports could not be another better thing. Now, y'all popped up, and you know, so there was violence about all this other stuff, but this other story pops up, which to me is really just a story about the continuation of the way we treat Black males from you know, adolescence on.
No, sir.
Some will say kindergarten on. No, sir. And the conservative Republican is about to have a hard time with me. But Raymond, Ray, set the story up for me, because actually it took me a long time to understand what went wrong here for this brother. So set up the story.
I will set the story up. This is John Morant. He is the star point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies. 23 years old at this point, so he is not a damn child. He recently had three to four skirmishes with the law. Mm-hmm. The one being his crew had an interaction with the Indiana Pacers staff. Allegedly, he had brandished a gun at his house with a 17-year-old. I think that there's some law that's going to happen behind that. And then also, it was an assault on an employee at the Finish Line. I think it was something that happened with his mom. He had went back to the store. Him and his crew had went back to the store, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's one more thing that I'm missing. Right? And so, I'm not missing this. And so, recently, I think it was 2 days ago, which started this whole ordeal. He was in a restaurant. I don't know if it was a gentleman's club or what. He was in a nightclub. I'm sorry, not a restaurant. He was in a nightclub. And on his Instagram Live, he was seen brandishing a .380 firearm, right? A baby 9mm. That was our community gun. He was seen brandishing on IG Live. And so he took a lot of heat for that. And so... But even prior to that, a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you guys remember, there was something between him and Shannon Sharp, right? And Shannon Sharp had pleaded with him and was like, "Bro, I see you going down the wrong road. You're not a thug. Mm-hmm. You're not this. You're not that," right? Mm-hmm. And trying to speak some life into him, trying to speak some life into his pops, because also we got to be reminded, because you know these ignorant ass people like to say, "Oh, he's probably from a single family household." No, his parents are married and he's from the suburbs, right? So we've got to name that too. These dumbasses out here that like to put these labels on young Black kids.
But anyway, wait a second now. Let's just stop there for a second. You mean he's got two parents?
He has two parents.
And he's still doing things? Like, I thought two parents was the inoculation from all bad things ever.
That's what I thought. Anyways, too.
Keep going, bro. Keep going. Keep going.
But no. So he's falling out. He's falling down that rabbit hole that you sometimes don't come back from. And you know, this is the last year of his rookie deal. He signed an extension, which is a 5-year, $230 million extension. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then he also has a deal with Nike, right? So like prior to this whole like mess up on Instagram, this kid was like, he's a superstar. And so and he can be packaged and sold as a commodity, and he's just got to straighten up.
So this is gonna sound terrible. I was just looking for, after I saw this pop up in all your feeds, so I see all the arguing about it. I was looking for the smoking gun of a law broken. And the most recent thing that has all the pressure is him brandishing a gun on Instagram.
Yeah.
So he's about to sit out for two big games of a basketball game.
Yeah.
Because he showed a gun, which is legal, apparently, in the United States in some places, on Instagram. And we got whole Congress people, and y'all are saying this to you before we started the show tonight, who sent out Christmas cards with the whole family, including kids, holding AKs.
El Michelle in the comments.
Right? Right? So yeah, so listen, so there we go. Of one mind, she saw the same thing. Boebert did it. You know what? Marjorie Taylor Greene had a whole advertisement commercial with her brandishing her gun and then shooting it. And I forgot what the actual, so I don't want to lie about it, but it was something like she was talking about shooting wokeness or shooting, you know, liberalism or something like that or whatnot, literally using it, right? And she's in Congress. So why is a black man sitting out of two basketball games for having a good time in a club and showing his gun? Now, listen, I didn't see the video. Maybe it's worse than I thought. Maybe it's worse than I thought. I'm looking for the law broken. I'm looking for the law broken.
Hey, listen. So when Kyrie did whatever Kyrie did, right? Like Kyrie didn't erase no accounts. He stood 10 toes down. He left his IG up. He took his licking, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yo, Jai took everything down. Yeah,
he took Twitter, IG,
Instagram account. Yo, if you 100% felt like you ain't do nothing wrong, you ain't taking nothing down. You just gonna stand on it.
I'm not saying that he doesn't feel like he's did something wrong or that people around him. I'm just saying that the standard of having to apologize for shit mm-hmm. is not a standard that applies to everybody. It's true. Not, it's okay. It's a one direction standard. You have a quarterback who's not in the league anymore because he kneeled during a song. Right. Like, and you have whole ass kind of white supremacists in government, mm-hmm. like in official positions.
But I think, Chris, there's also this idea of the NBA having a code of conduct.
And a CBA,
the collective mm-hmm. bargaining agreement, mm-hmm. which sets out a series of things that players are obligated to do. And one of them is represent the NBA in an appropriate manner. Now, mm-hmm. appropriate mm-hmm. is subjective, mm-hmm. right? Like, I want to be clear that that's subjective. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. My issue with Ja Morant, mm-hmm. one, if you pull out a gun like that, you better be ready to use it. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing for me. That's like, bro, because if people in a place like Memphis, New York, Detroit, Chicago, etc., see you doing that, okay, they gonna roll up on you and be like, mm-hmm. okay, well, mm-hmm. you bought that mm-hmm. life then, bro.
Listen. Hey, Rob, listen.
So you think he's putting his other players at risk? You think that's part of the thing here?
Before we get there, though, right? Like, yeah. Wow, you from the mean streets of Detroit. Chris, you from New Orleans, and you'd have been in Richmond. You'd have been in some Oakland and some rough places. Bro, Memphis is fucking real.
Yeah, man.
This is true. I mean, this is true.
You can't get into Memphis, flash a gun on IG, and then think that Ja ain't going somewhere and people going to try him at that point.
Yeah, well, this is what I want to say. Yeah. How come he's sitting out for two games and this don't get you no trouble right here, right? See,
this? Why would that get you in trouble?
What's wrong? Yo, who is that?
This don't get you in trouble?
Oh, that's Kyle Kuzma from the Wizards.
Yeah.
This don't get you in trouble? He show a gun. This should get you in trouble. Anyways, I know I'm making light of it, but I don't understand. I really struggle to understand this, I guess. The amount of confusion that is causing in a number of people talking about
So I tried to frame it, right? And I did this on purpose. I did this purposely because, like, a lot of times when you put a Twitter feed up or whatnot, and you let everybody respond to it, then some people are very irresponsible in terms of like how they respond, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so I put us in a group so that we can respond from an uplifted OG black man kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm, because I know mm-hmm. that we've had folks pour into us. And so if we were in positions to pour into Ja, mm-hmm. what would we say to him? What kind of advice would we give to him, right? So I wanted to frame that correctly. Yeah. I still have people DMing me talking about, oh, y'all just caping for these effeminate black males.
Say more about that. Where did that come from? I mean,
Somebody said that. Somebody said that?
Yes. Like, you know, anything that comes out, right, with black men and us having conversations about them, any kind of critique or whatever, is always like this whole...
I will say this. First of all, the Hoteps go too crazy sometimes. And that comes out of Hotep Twitter. And yeah. And listen, I love Tariq and some of them other folks for minimal entertainment, for like short-term entertainment. I can't take it in big doses. Like that foundational Black American stuff has like some resonance. Like I like to live there for a couple of seconds, but then I like to get in my car and leave because, you know, they do some crazy shit. Yeah. But I do think we overanalyze Black men sometimes. I do think that we have these conversations in ways like we're having it about Michael B. Jordan right now. And what's homeboy?
Did you see what happened with Michael B. Jordan? Did you see why people got all uptight?
The corny thing, you know, like with the person from his high school who called him corny.
I don't know if you saw it. You saw it?
I didn't see this one.
So he was having a conversation with a young lady who he went to high school with, right?
Yeah.
And she had basically said in several other instances, oh, he was corny in high school.
I saw this.
And so when he's having a conversation with her, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm corny, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Mm-hmm. He matched her fucking energy. And I applaud him for that because he had every right to match her energy. That's not anti-Black women. That's not any of that shit. He had every right to match her energy. Yeah. Bro, I listen to everybody's podcast. You say something about me, when we get in person, I'm just like Michael B. Jordan, so I'm corny.
I mean, like, listen, this is the level of psychoanalyzing that we do. We're, you know, psychoanalyzing him, and he took a picture with some other Black celebrities, and they were hugging too much, and you know, there's a picture of this is how old men say the name Aesop Rocky. You know, Aesop Rocky is on Aesop Rocky. He's on the cover of something with a kilt on, and they give him, you know, a hard time about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are we psychoanalyzing ourselves to death for not being enough of this and enough of that? And let me take that back. I was about to say I'm not witnessing that happening to other people. There is some hyper masculine nonsense happening on the white side of the world too. So, you know, like,
but I ain't worried about them. They got
testicular tanning, and you know, they're like, you know, they're into some weird. I've
never even known anything about that until you said.
You know where that came from? That came from your boy Tucker Carlson. He's got a whole documentary on how Blackness or how maleness has taken a slide, and how testosterone is on the decrease, and how Black men are not. I'm sorry, I keep saying Black men under 30. Are having the least amount of sex that they've ever had ever, and you add that to the trans panic, and they're worried. And and then there's this other stat too that it's the highest number of males that are uncoupled right now ever, but somehow, and I don't understand how this math works. Y'all got to help me with understand how math works, because it's not the highest. Women are coupled up. But it's the highest number of men that are uncoupled, involuntarily uncoupled too, by the way. And that's where a lot of this anger is coming from. So it's not just us.
How do you collect that data?
What's that?
I'm like, where do you just go around and be like, hey, you single? You want to be single?
Are you realist by choice? Are you uncoupled? And what does it mean to be uncoupled? Like,
you know where some of the data comes from, the dating apps. And it, you know, they find out.
You can tell us from them dating apps,
bro. Listen, OkCupid or whatever it is, OK something or other, puts out a report every year about who's the most favored of the races.
Yes, I was having this conversation.
So Black women and Asian men are the least responded to on all the apps, on the dating apps. Wow. White men go after Asian women more than they go after white women. There's just like all kinds of strange like things that you can get from the data. When you start harvesting data, the bottom line is they're having a man panic in white world too right now. Like a man panic, they are having a man panic in white world too. But we need to stop it with our own people, because we're raising children, we're raising boys, we're raising girls, we're trying to establish pro-social behavior in our young people. And I think that's where I was earlier when I was asking y'all about the educational value. Is everything that we're talking about right now going to give us pro-social young men and women who are going to go out into the world and earn a little something and then come together and then earn something together and then give us the race of people that we need to win in America? That's really the bottom line question with all of this. Is Lil Wayne going to help us get there? I don't think so. No. Are half these drug addicts on records going to get us anywhere other than kind of where we at, right? I sound old, but listen, I'm owning it at least, right? You know, I'm owning it. Y'all not owning it. See, you know,
now we like, own it. I mean,
you know, Ray, you just for men and your beard. You know, I could tell because that would be all the way gray. See, like, bro, come with the I real don't, club.
I don't know.
He said ass reef. Or did you say that's reef?
Yeah.
That's not reef. Well, listen, as we come, you know, as we're coming to a close here, what are your final thoughts on that last question around the cultural value of the things that we love so much? It's like your sneakers or whatever, but we know in the back of our mind, we got to do some rethinking about how we allow our young people to engage in the consumer culture and in the hip hop culture.
I think for me, my closing thought about it is I think it's a perfect opportunity to actually have conversations with our young people, our own children, extended families, uncles, nephews, mentees, whatever, and have folks put down the devices and just have a conversation about consumer culture, capitalism, et cetera, and what role do we all play in it as consumers, both good and bad? Because we're all consumers of something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, for me, I'm taking it on as a challenge to try to do that more with young people, you know, my own son, and just talk about both the contradictions, the why, and the history of it all. And I don't know that there's a right answer, but I think until we actually have the conversation, which is what I actually appreciate about 8 Black Hands, what I appreciate about Twitter and other podcasts that people have, is this an opportunity for us to engage in conversations as a community. And you hope that, you know, over time we can continue to engage in these conversations. And these one conversation will help impact the lives of 2, 3, 4, 5 different people. So, yeah.
What about you, Raymond?
So I'm starting to look more closely at the value of the dollar. And how I spend money. I feel like a lot of us are getting to the age to where how you spend money now could determine what kind of life you're gonna have when you get older. I had this post about Social Security, and so Social Security, they're trying to move Social Security back to 70. The average black man is living to age 68. The average black person is living to age 71.8. So here it is. You have folks that are paying into Social Security their whole lives, and these folks are trying to back it up to where you can pay into it your whole life, but not even receive or reap any of the benefits from what you paid into it. And so I'm just thinking about that in terms of like the financial moves that I make, more so, you know, making sure that I'm doing the things that I need to do so that my kids are left in a better space than I ever was. And then also, you know, just making this commitment towards life insurance, right? Because you see other folks, and I don't want to pigeonhole us, but you see other folks use life support as like a come up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's supposed to be used, as opposed to people out here posting GoFundMes and shit to bury their loved ones. But those are also things that we don't talk about enough, because if we have these conversations, then it becomes, oh, you punching down. Hell no, I'm not punching down. I'm punching up. I'm trying to get ready.
And I think that's really important, because that builds wealth. Nice. Like, we need to like get in the habit of just talking about wealth, just even talking about it, even when we don't have any, like, so that at least the dialogue is going. Like what you just said right now is a public service announcement, right? If you do not have plot insurance, burial insurance, life insurance, or whatnot, see that Tom Selleck commercial and do something. I don't know, make something happen for yourself, right? and there's this thing, you know, I didn't think of it this way, but it came up in one of my feeds and it stuck with me. Someone was talking about don't wait until you die to give it to your kids anyways. Give them the experiences you can give them now, right? Like invest in them right now while you're still alive and while you're still here, and give them experiences, give them insight into things, help set them up, right? Like if you can do the stuff that other people do, like help them with their down payment on a piece of property, you know, whatever, while you're alive. Don't wait until you're dead. Like you're gonna be leaving it to them. And you know, the other thing I'll say about this show, just in general, we didn't get around to Chris Rock too, you know, like I'm interested in this pro-social behavior thing. And I feel like we're having too many parasocial relationships. And by that, I mean people who look at celebrity culture and rich folks like they're their friends and like they have relationships with them. Like, you know, Chris Rock's my boy, or, you know, whatever. Chris Rock is not your boy. That was a trash set that he did last night.
All right, don't talk about it. I'm about to go watch it right now.
It was rich man comedy. He'll say it right in the middle of it. It's, I'm rich and you not. And this is what rich people do type of comedy. This wasn't working class. It wasn't middle class. It was like straight up rich man comedy. And it hit me that we are allowing our kids to grow up with celebrities and millionaires acting like they're real people in their real lives, and they're not. Right. And they can't get their pro-social behavior from parasocial relationships with people that don't give a shit about them. Straight up black capitalists who are in black capitalist systems, who have 20 and 30 houses and don't know. They're selling you gangsterism while from Saint-Tropez, right? They're recording in Turks and Caicos. They're recording their album and they're selling you pathology, black pathology. And I think we should talk about at some point who's going to come around with another pro-social movement. Like who's going to write the book on it? Who's going to help us guide us through it? Because I have questions. I don't have answers to it, but I have questions about what is pro-social education. You know, I know we're trying to struggle and do it for our kids, but anyways, listen, I appreciate you brothers coming in. Yes, hey, sir.
Umar's opening in school. He got a date. We got to get him on the show.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Using violence to end.
Doesn't that sound suspicious? Anyways, you've been watching another episode of the Eight Black Hands. And this episode is actually one of my favorites in that. I like the fact that we can mix it up with hosts and other folks coming in. The Eight Black Hands can be a tribe rather than having to be just a set group of people. This has been dope. Even though we have a member who's from a city that has produced no hip hop that is decent. Eminem. Big Sean is dope. Actually, I didn't know. I did not know that. That's a Detroit special.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Big Sean is dope.
Oh, Dilla.
Dilla, the greatest.
You can't talk about hip hop without talking about Dilla,
the greatest hip hop producer of all time.
I don't know about that. I'm going with Manny.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah. You know. Anyways, okay. That's a little better. I forgot about that. Right. Y'all need to get some new cleaners for your hotels, but that's good. That's good. I appreciate that. my quick story, I've only been to Detroit a couple of times, and both times I stayed at the big, what's like the main, Marriott. No, it's like the big round thing.
Yeah, one. Marriott.
Right, is that what that is?
Right on.
And there were like three different kinds of hair in the bathtub. it was like a Rick James party had taken place in that bathtub. That's my only memory. That's my memory of Detroit.
We'll welcome you back.
I had really good food. I did not expect it, but I had really good food.
Why would you not expect it?
I never hear about foodiness out of Detroit. Now I guess more
from Detroit, from Mississippi.
That's true. This is true. They are all from the South, right?
That's right.
This is true. All right, Great Migration. Shout out to the Great Migration to all the people who left the South. This has been another episode of the Eight Black Hands. As always, we appreciate you all for sharing your Sundays with us. If you like the show, please share it with a friend, share it with a family member, leave us a good review, and help us promote the show. We appreciate you all. We'll see you next week with another episode of the Eight.